Next argument, which is Woods versus Commissioner, Mr. Faulk.
May it please the Court. Although the Indiana Department of Correction allows prisoners to have virtually unlimited correspondence rights, including the rights to have pen pals and receive and send them correspondence, it has prohibited prisoners from formally advertising for pen pals or receiving communications from pen pal services. The rationale for this is to prevent the persons on the outside who decide they wish to communicate with a pen pal and then initiate contact from then being defrauded into sending the prisoner money. But the Department of Correction has put into place safeguards that absolutely prevent this fraud, because now only persons on a person's visiting list can make contributions, and the visiting list is restricted to 10 family members and 2 non-family members. All of them have to go through screening. So therefore, given the great deference that the department must be owed in this situation, the policy goes too far, and it's unconstitutional.
But no, look, it doesn't work that way, because suppose you're getting out in a year, and you have some pen pal that you pretend you're engaged to or something, like this woman who had 2 fiancés. So you say, well, you know, you can't send me money, but, you know, I'm going to be out in a year, and I want you to set it aside, and you want to keep it, and then when I get out, I have this tremendous wedding and so on. Give me my money, everything, right? What's to prevent that?
Well, nothing, Your Honor. But the problem...
That's a problem,
well,
isn't it?
It's a,
the
problem,
you can accumulate the money for these people, for these defrauding prisoners, outside of the prison.
But the source of the problem in that event is the fact that there are unlimited correspondence rights. Prisoners can obtain pen pals through other prisoners, the department argues, through people coming into the prison.
Have it both ways. Now you're saying that this, you say the rule is oppressive, but now you're saying it's ineffectual, right? You can't argue both.
Well, for some prisoners, like the particular named plaintiffs, this is the only contact they have, Your Honor. But given that the department allows such a wide amount of correspondence,
they can write anybody in the world, right?
If they can contact someone in the world, the way the pen pal sites...
What's the problem with writing a letter to someone?
Well, they have
to write
a
letter to Charles Colson, you know, the prisoner rights guy, right?
They have to have that contact, and what the pen pal...
Well, they have a contact, just write a letter.
Well, they have to have someone to write it to, Your Honor.
Well, no, they just need to have an address.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor.
Well, can't they find it? Don't there no phone books in prison?
Yeah, don't fax it.
There are not phone books in prison, Your Honor, and the problem
his
is...
His experience with prisons are fairly limited, I can tell you.
Well, I should say mine is as well. Mine is only basically as a visitor, Your Honor. But the problem is that the department is saying we have this problem, but we allow prisoners to have pen pals. We allow them to solicit in a very surreptitious way. I mean, at least the pen pal sites are open. You can go on the site. You have to decide whether you want to communicate with a prisoner. You can see who the prisoner is. You can
see who the prisoner is. Depends what picture he's posted.
You can cross-reference to the Indiana Department of Corrections website, which will give you a full, not a picture.
Yeah,
but
of course, the sophisticated people are not going to become pen pals. But they're, you know, they're exploiting lonely people, go on the pen pal website, and they find themselves with a prisoner misrepresenting himself. And
the policy the department has now takes care of the problem that gave rise to the policy because of the contributions. The fact that prisoners have unlimited correspondence rights and third parties can obtain pen pals for them emphasizes the fact that this is too remotely related. It is so under-responsive to what the department is saying is a problem. Although I should add, what the department said was a problem, they addressed through the prohibition on who can make the contributions. That problem has been solved.
As I said, there's a big loophole there.
There's a loophole whenever you allow unlimited correspondence. There's a loophole when you allow prisoners to get the names from other prisoners and write them completely out of the blue.
Which they can do. Right.
What they can't do is advertise for prisoners and for pen pals and have the pen pal on the outside decide, yes, I want to communicate with this person.
So why can't one of these prisoners, one of these lonely, I feel sorry for these, you know, guys, but suppose one of them asks one of his pals, would you, you know, write your family or someone, and I want to write to Charles Colson, so could you ask them to look up his address for me? As soon as he has the address, he can write him, and he say, you know, I know you're interested in rehabilitation, and I don't have any family or friends, so I'd like you to find me someone in your organization to be my pen pal.
I think that would be possible if the prisoner knows who Charles Kosin is. But the more likely scenario that promoted by the department is for the prisoner to ask another prisoner, hey, are there some people I can write to? And then you have this whole underground pen pal, which is endorsed by the DOC, but this very public advertiser for pen pals is what the DOC is now prohibiting. And that simply is not rational. As I said, it's too under-responsive to the problem.
When you start advertising on a website, you have exposure to a lot of strange people who may be perfect victims of your fraud. I mean, what kind of people go on websites looking for pen pals?
I can't answer that question, Your Honor.
Well, no,
there are many pen pal sites that I looked at in promoting, in writing this brief, only in writing the brief, where you can just sign on as an outside person on the outside of the prison and say, I want to communicate with people. I think it's how people communicate.
Does it cost any money?
It costs the prisoner money to register. It costs nothing for the...
How much does it cost the prisoner?
I honestly don't know. I think it's like $30, but that's...
Yeah, okay, let's say $30. Okay, somebody gets a pen pal.
Mm-hmm.
Then he gets in touch and he says, you know what? I think I could get a lot of pen pals out of here. If I get $10 for every pen pal I can get,
and
now he's got a business going inside the prison.
And that was the problem that gave rise to the policy, the fact that the department perceived that pen pals were sending money in under fraudulent pretenses.
Well, that's not fraudulent. It's just that a guy is recruiting people on the inside and getting whatever the pen pal business. He gets 10 and they get 20. And he's got everybody on his level getting pen pals.
But no money can enter the institution. Because of the policy.
Well, how do they pay $30?
Well, the person can take that out of his account, but the pen pal cannot send the prisoner money. That was the problem that gave rise to the policy, and that's what the policy was designed to fix, and it fixed that. So now we're hypothesizing about other types of fraud.
Tell your pen pal, send the money to my mother or something, she'll bring it with me when she comes.
And you can do the exact same thing with the other pen pals that you can legitimately recruit according to the department.
Yeah, but that's, you keep arguing that really their rule is full of loopholes. So,
but if it's so under-responsive to the problem, I think the case law indicates that that is a situation where you cannot say it is rationally related to the purpose for what the rule exists for.
Adopt a tougher rule.
I can't say what the department will do. The department recognizes the importance of communication and that it is a very valuable therapeutic tool to be able to communicate with persons in the outside world, since so many prisoners will reenter the outside world.
Well, given that they have that interest, why don't we just leave it to the prison to decide what rule to have?
Well, the problem with the rule they have now cuts off, without a rational reason, a significant way for prisoners to be able to gain those
people to communicate with. Well, why would a prison be irrational?
I'm sorry?
Why would a prison be irrational?
I think what the prison did was it dealt with the problem it had. It removed the ability of people to send money in, and now the rule is still there, even though the problem is not.
So why are they doing this? They're just stupid?
No, Your Honor.
Vicious?
No, Your Honor.
What are the other reasons for irrationality?
I think they're wrong, Your Honor. I think the test...
I think they're trying to take power they don't have.
I think Turner puts limits, and I think they've exceeded those limits.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Fall. Mr. Steiner?
May it please the Court. In Turner, the case, the Supreme Court made it clear that the First Amendment rights of prison inmates may be regulated if the regulations relate to legitimate penological objectives and are not exaggerated responses to those objectives. So, you know, that's exactly what this case is, I believe. We had a specific problem that was...
Are there no phone books in the penitentiary at all?
I don't know about phone books. You have counselors, you have case managers, you have chaplains, you have lots of people.
You have phones?
Yes, there are phones. And, I really don't know whether there's phone books or not.
I think we're pausing the threshold of a great discovery.
Whether there's phone books or not, there are people you can talk to who can get you telephone numbers.
So can a prisoner call up information and ask for the number of Charles Colson?
Well, you're supposed to, I think they're supposed to make collect calls usually, you know, at least traditionally. I think they have PIN numbers.
Well, I think probably Colson's organization accepts collect calls from prisoners since he's in the prison rehabilitation business. Right?
I think if you talk to a chaplain, if you talk to a counselor, they might help you make that phone call to someone on the outside. I mean, that's...
Mr. Falk's principal argument, I think, is that given that you've forbidden the receipt of money, you take care of the problem, and this is a gratuitous addition to it.
Well,
to your solution.
Just as we said at the district court and we said here, it doesn't really solve the problem entirely. It's an effort to try to solve the problem to some degree by requiring people to, you know, have either friends or family send money.
He says the problem was solved by banning receipt of money.
It's not solved at all because in terms of these contacts that go through these commercial internet, you know, pen pal sites, all you have to do is tell the pen pal to send it to your friend or your family member, or maybe to a bank account outside of the prison. We're just talking about, you know, in terms of these regulations, what the prison, you know, can control, the inmate account, that kind of thing. So you're not preventing, you know, them from making those contacts and having them send it elsewhere. So that part of it doesn't completely solve the problem, nor does reading the mail. Of course, you know, the prisons take the prerogative of looking at inmate mail. But as we showed, you know, in this particular case, there's something like, at least at the time this, you know, this summary judgment was done, 8,400 pieces of inmate mail every day, you know, letters. The staff is looking at it, but they're not looking at every detail. And even if you looked at the, you know, if you had that kind of staff that you could spend all that time looking at that.
8,400 is incoming and outgoing?
I think it
they can read either.
That's right. They're reading in and out. And there's just, and so you look at it, and even if you looked at every word in a letter, which you can't really do in that kind of setting without having an incredible amount of staff devoted to it. And you know, that's really not the purpose. You're just trying to, you know, catch the big things. You still probably have ways of, communicating where you could avoid them from knowing even if you looked at every word. So that doesn't solve the whole problem. So you had this specific problem that was investigated. And you found that I think there was 200, at least 200 female inmates in Indiana and 150 male inmates in Indiana were on these commercial pen pal sites. And what the investigator found was that a good part of the information, I think most of the information, was deceptive or misleading, that the inmates were posting on these sites. The pictures were not of the person, was actually corresponding. There were other things wrong. That's what he found out. So you have a situation where we know that a sizable number of offenders were abusing the opportunity to use these commercial sites. And they were defrauding people. There was a story of this 73-year-old man who had, you know, gave up his life savings. There was a lady who that was in the prison who had managed to get more than $20,000 sent to her in the course of a year. And there were lots of other examples that were, you know, much smaller. But, you know, the prison authorities do have some responsibility when they have these charges, these people in their charge, to make, you know, to try to do something to prevent them from defrauding the public. And that's what they were doing with this particular regulation. And we think there's a clearly rational relationship between trying to prevent fraud and, given the fact that they knew that inmates had used these commercial, you know, pen pal sites to defraud, to prevent them from going on that. So that, you know, so we have that, you know, basic nexus there that's really required to make the regulation appropriate, you know, under the Constitution and not a violation of the First Amendment. And it was narrowly tailored. Mr. Falk wants to say that it's ineffective. Well, what the prison authorities do recognize that there is some benefit to inmates being able to communicate with people on the outside. If you go through, use the example you were talking about, Chuck Colson. If you go through Chuck Colson, you're going to have someone who's interested in trying to help that inmate rehabilitate in a classic sense to change his life in a certain way. The people that go on the commercial pen pal sites are looking for someone, perhaps because they're lonely, perhaps for other reasons. But they are probably much more gullible. And in fact, there was some information from the individual who gave a deposition for the department, who had a long experience as a superintendent and as a representative of the department, that he had experience that people who were in ministry and that kind of things, generally you did not have problems when they corresponded and that kind of thing. And with the commercial site, we did have information that there was a problem. So I think there's all the factors were there to say that this regulation is appropriate in the case of narrowly tailored. There would be a greater burden on the facilities if you had to do what Mr. Falk really said could be done, that is look closely at every single letter and try to figure out what's going on in each of those situations. That's a nearly impossible situation, costs money. All those things counsel in favor of what the district court judge decided in this case, which is that the regulation was constitutional. And I would ask that that judgment be affirmed.
Thank you, Mr. Steiner. Mr. Falk?
Thank you. Of the thousands of letters that come into the DOC every day, the department has no way of knowing now which one of them are pen pals, people who have no close relationship, because the department allows people to have pen pals, allows them to be acquired in all sorts of ways.
It's trying to keep them off the websites.
Well, that's correct, Your Honor. That's exactly what they're trying to do. But that doesn't mean that the fraud that they're concerned about now isn't being perpetrated in many other ways, many
That's
more private ways.
Prisoners are ingenious, and sure, it's a leaky vessel, but at least it doesn't sink completely, right? That's the hope.
Well, but there's absolutely no evidence that this would cause it to sink, Your Honor, and I realize...
So is this, and if you win, is this some great blow for the First Amendment and the marketplace of ideas and opinions is enriched by access to pen pal websites? Is that what we're talking about here?
We're talking about the correspondence rights of prisoners, which are, of course, within the First Amendment, subject, of course, to the...
Pretty remote from the purposes of the First Amendment, isn't it?
I don't think so.
People contribute to the marketplace and ideas and opinions Holmes talked about?
I think being able to communicate back and forth without state interference is what the First Amendment is about. Yes, Your Honor.
That's what the First Amendment is about?
That's, among other things, yes, Your Honor.
Do you think that's what these 18th century people were worried about?
I think they would be upset if the government told them they could not communicate with people.
With prisoners.
The people in the 18th century who were creating the First Amendment.
With prisoners.
I'm sorry?
With prisoners. You think they were worried about
prisoners not
having enough correspondence with the outside?
I dare say that was not what they were thinking about, Your Honor.
Century.
I suspect they were not thinking about that, but when we're dealing with communication rights, yes, we are dealing with the First Amendment.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Falk. And you were appointed. This is pro bono? But it's pro bono. So anyway, we thank you very much for your efforts on behalf of the client. We thank Mr. Steiner. Now, last